Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
So two hat tricks. That's a thing.
Yeah, the
That's
last
good.
Time that happened, we were nine, Zach.
I'll take it. That's good, especially against Boston.
Yeah.
Especially against Boston. That feels good.
No, it felt really good. Couldn't have happened to a better group of guys. Good for the Sabres getting a 7-2 win over the lovely Boston Bruins last night.
Tage Thompson, JJ Paterka, both with hat tricks, and then the seventh goal, as it was a 7-2 win, scored by Zach Benson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was going to say Jack Quinn, but Benson got the tip on it.
Yep, Quinn and Cousins, the sisters. Yeah. Good for them.
12 seconds to go on that last goal, too.
Yeah.
So that's just like rubbing salt in the wound. I love those
good.
Types of goals. Good win. I mean, play like that every night. Let's keep on going.
We'll give a few minutes here to the Sabres because, again, last night, really cool win. You mentioned it. You know, we were nine the last time the Sabres had two guys score a hat-trick in the
and
same game.
And before that, it was 06.
Mm-hmm.
Joe brought it up. It was Pominville and Hesch in 06. So last time it happened in 08 was Drew Stafford and Derek Roy in a 10-1 win. When I saw that Sabres PR tweeted that out, I immediately retweeted it with the Matt Damon from Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
Where he like ages.
Yep.
Man, that feels like forever ago. It feels, because it kind of was. I mean, it's almost 20 years ago now, which is also kind of weird to think about. I mean, it's 17 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I watched a lot of that game, and the whole time I'm thinking, and me and you have talked about this a little bit off air. I don't think we've mentioned it on air. The more I'm watching it, the more I'm just like, go get Pettersson.
Yeah.
Do something.
Please.
Do something. There's clearly some good players on this core. I know I've said kind of the opposite because I was frustrated with this team. There are some good guys on this team that you can build around. I'm okay getting rid of some of these prospects. I'm prospect fatigued. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Go get a guy like Elias Pettersson, who is clearly a number one center. I from what I've seen, Tage has been playing on the wing for quite a bit now. So that even now is more of a push forward to, go get a number one center. Tage is no longer that, or currently is not that.
Well, and to be fair, too, when he's not playing center, he's been better. So it's I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, you shouldn't have him on the wing, because he's actually scoring at a pretty decent pace when he's on the wing.
Mm-hmm.
He has 23 goals on the season now, and I think Paul said earlier with Jeremy and Joe that he's on a 46-goal pace. That's awesome. Like, obviously you need more than just that, but that alone, that's one of your guys that you signed to a long-term deal returning to what he used to put out. And that's what you need. That's what you've needed since that season, and you haven't gotten it. But now here you are. You finally seem to have unlocked what he needs, but now you need a center to go with him. Because, yes, Yuri Kulik has been awesome. I don't think he's nearly ready to be a number one center in the NHL.
No, and
he's been good.
And that's how you break his development again.
Right, because that's what you did.
Not again for him, but again just in general.
Because that's what you did to Casey Mittelstadt.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, sure, he's... Actually, I don't really know if he's figuring it out in Colorado, because it's been not a great season for him so far. But
started off fun for him.
Yeah, but my point is you can't do that again. Like, you can't make the same mistake, so you have to try to get somebody that will, you know, just not be a placeholder, but, like, Pettersson would come in and be your number one center for the next 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's signed until 2032.
26 right now through 43 games played, 31 points, 11 goals. A little bit of a down year for
him.
On
a bad Vancouver team where the vibes are all the way off.
Yeah, and there's a reason why we're talking about a Pettersson trade, even though he's inarguably a cornerstone piece for them, or has been.
The talk is that him and JT Miller, one of their other top players a few years ago, they're having problems with each other in the locker room, and that's causing other problems in the locker room with other players. So it's like there's a whole mess going on in Vancouver, a lot like what happened, well, not necessarily a lot like it, but in terms of the size of the mess, it's a lot like what happened to the Sabres a few years ago. It's a different kind of mess because the players are fighting each other, whereas, you know, when everything happened with Jack Eichel and everything like that, it was completely different. It was more the franchise and the player were disagreeing rather than the players in the locker room. But, Vancouver feels like they need a hard reset. The Sabres really need a big move. It just, it feels like it's right there. And everyone's saying it's right there. What is the holdup? Is it something on Vancouver's side? Is it something on the Sabres side? Is it someone else is offering something and the Sabres are trying to counter? Like, I need this trade to happen. It needs to happen.
I think a lot of us need it. I know I'm certainly among this too. I need it to feel something. I need it to feel like the lights are still on in the organization, that it's not just punch in, punch out, go to work, sit in an office, make some phone calls, and go home.
Yeah.
I need to know that the lights are still on there. I think partially a lot of it, too, is how the Bills season ended. You lost again to Kansas City. In part, I think Kansas City is just flat out a better team than you. I think they wait now for the playoffs to really unleash themselves. And so, yeah, for the other Buffalo team, I'd like to know that there is actually attempts to make a better franchise. In a move for Pettersson, yes, you may have to give up Bo Byram or Owen Power and then probably someone like Dylan Cousins to get it done, probably. And you may have to give up a little bit more. But at least it proves that they're willing to do something, that someone like in Kevin Adams' position is willing to do something that may cost him his job, but ultimately his inaction probably will cost it anyways. And if it works, that's the move.
Right. And because that's the thing here is like moves in the past that we've talked about are not necessarily like make a move to make a move. You need to do something. This is a move that alters a franchise.
Yeah.
This is a move that changes the course of where you're going for the next 5 years. If you go out and get Elias Pettersson, who scored 100 points 2 years ago and has been considered in some seasons a Selke candidate for being such a good defensive forward, who also has insane chemistry with Rasmus Dahlin from their time on the Swedish national team. There's all sorts of parallels here for this player to what the Sabres need.
Yep.
He's basically Jack Eichel, just without the internal strife or any of the baggage that you had with him. I mean, granted, he is coming from an awful situation, so you can't, you know, replicate that because he's going to want to leave even faster. But it just... If I was Kevin Adams, I would be doing everything in my power to make this trade happen. And I feel like he is because of the way that people are talking about how close the Sabres are.
It does help that, you know, people like Elliot Friedman or
Darren Dreger.
Yeah. Even Chad DeDominicis locally here with Expected Buffalo. It does help hearing all that going on. I will say, though, me personally, just how negative I have been on the Sabres, just feelings. You've heard me say it off air, too. Like, I kind of scoff at it. I'm like, cool, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Right. I won't believe it until it does.
Yeah, but a performance like last night at least kind of like gave me a bit of a pulse of like, oh, but maybe what if it did?
Right,
last night was the first time I was like getting excited about the prospect because up to that point I truly believed it was never going to happen.
And if nothing else, this trade definitely sparks that locker room because a month ago you had the owner show up in Montreal saying the solution's in the room, and now you're talking about trading for a franchise center. Like there's definitely something going on there in terms of the players seeing what's happening. The players hear rumors. They read Twitter. They do all sorts of stuff like that. I mean, it's something that can really spark a room. And I don't think, you know, that's enough. I do think the trade has to happen regardless. But in the meantime, it's nice to see the players stepping up. It's nice to see that.
It's nice to see that. And to your point, too, he's got this locked up till
2032.
Yeah, so he's in his 30s.
Yeah.
You're going to have him for a number of years. That seems to be an issue that Adams ran into this offseason of not trading for guys is because he wanted them long term. Pettersson figures this out. And while it may not push for the playoffs this year kind of feels dead in that sense, it can push into the offseason. You will have shown some semblance of credibility to the rest of the league. Pettersson, Thompson, Dahlin, the upswing of guys like Kulik. All of a sudden there is sort of this foundational pieces for free agents to look at and go, I wouldn't mind that.
And there's also
I would not mind going there.
You also, you know, you brought up Chad DeDominicis on Expected Buffalo talking about it in his most recent podcast episode. Also with that, he talks about another trade the Sabres could potentially make in with Pittsburgh for Marcus Pettersson, not to be confused with Elias Pettersson.
So fun.
Yeah, and then there's another Elias. There's two Elias Petterssons on Vancouver. So, hey, let's just get both of them just to make sure we get the right one.
We got to be better about naming people.
You also have Marcus Pettersson, who is in Pittsburgh as a left-shot defenseman in the final year of his contract. It's a player that apparently, according to Chad, the Sabres have really had their eye on. They talked to Pittsburgh about him. Pittsburgh wants a prospect in return. So there is stuff there, but the thing with Marcus Pettersson is he's in the last year of his contract. So he's a guy where, let's say you have to trade a Bowen Byram to get Elias Pettersson, he's a guy that comes right in and replaces him, at least for this season. Which, that right there, too, kind of shows you the growth of a GM. The foresight to say, I'm not just going to make this big trade if I don't have something to, you know,
fall back on
and make sure I, well, not necessarily fall back on, but make sure I have my defense position covered. Because if you do trade Bowen Byram, that's a big piece. Yeah. He is a good, really good defenseman. On most teams that don't have two number one overall pick defensemen on them, he would be a number one defenseman. He's good enough for that. He's a fourth overall pick. He has been awesome for the Sabres in like the almost year they've had him. But he also needs a contract this offseason. And I don't think I don't really know if the Sabres should put that much money into another defenseman because he's going to want a big deal. And Vancouver is a team that might need somebody like that, which if that's the price, I would say do it every single day of the week. Because again, Elias Pettersson is a franchise-changing center.
Still got a few months, though, before the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Which,
but we already had a big trade.
We already had a big trade. Rantanen, he goes to Carolina.
Still that was so weird.
Huge. That's my fear, though, is we're going to have these talks all the way to March 7th.
I don't think so.
You think if it's going to happen,
because
it'll happen before that.
Like it sounds like how like Vancouver wants this badly, and if it sounds like they want it bad enough to do it before the Four Nations face off, a lot of the trades are or a lot of the teams sound like they're almost using that as like a pre-trade deadline
because they'll have enough time to kind of integrate the player. Mm-hmm. It won't be a rushed kind of process.
That is like there's a I think week and a half break for that tournament.
There's a little bit of a break there. And that's
Wednesday, February 12th is when it starts, and it goes to February 20th. So you have 8 days at least of no NHL games to play. If teams want to get something done, it's either going to be right before that or even during that. I think that makes the most sense for any team looking to make a trade is to do it right before it or during that tournament.
It's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. I mean, it might be one of the first times in a long time the Sabres are somewhat interesting, especially in a big kind of trade talk. Mm-hmm. And now that Carolina's out due to them getting Rantanen, it's starting
There's
to feel legitimate.
There's other teams still involved. I mean,
oh, of course.
The Rangers are, I think the Rangers are another one.
But every report from the big guys, you've brought them up, guys like Drager and Friedman, the Sabres seem to be in pole position.
Yeah, and it sounds like they have been since day one.
Yeah.
Another thing that's interesting, too, is it's an organizational thing. There's no worry about money or bonuses or salary or anything like that. That's all green lit. Like, you just go get the guy. So.
Get it done.
Yeah. Get it across the finish line for once.
Well, because like, me and you talked about it off air, but it is one of those, like, I don't care if you made phone calls. I don't care how close it was.
Right.
I need it done.
Yeah. I've heard how close everything was over the past however many years.
I need something to happen. Yeah. You're a GM who has struggled to do this. Mm-hmm. And honestly, some of the moments that you've stepped in the mud have been you saying, yeah, I was on the phones. You know, no one talks to more GMs than me or, you know, however it was put. You got to get it done. This is a franchise that it barely has a pulse.
Right. And look, honestly, I obviously want to get it done, but just the fact that they are big swinging like this, that is a really good sign, to be honest. Because in some seasons, we've seen, regardless of GM, we've seen it get to this point of the year of like, well, playoffs are a real long shot, and we don't want to make any moves that'll like, you know, rock the boat in the middle of the season. So we're just going to wait to the offseason. And then you miss out on all of those trade opportunities until the offseason.
When
so
in reality, the Sabres are a team that like should desperately be trying to rock the boat.
So it's a good sign to see, too, that they're willing to make moves in season, even if the season's out the window. Because, again, this is a move that does not necessarily – I mean, it'll affect this season for sure if that happens. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't affect just this year. It affects years down the road because Pettersson is locked up for seven more years.
Yep. It's the exact move Kevin Adams has wanted to make. It seems to fit all of the boxes for him. 803-0550, the number to call. If you want to jump in on the Sabres 7-2 win, the Elias Pettersson trade talks, obviously would love to talk about those. But, Josh, it's draft season, baby.
Is it?
I have already begun watching just little clips here and there.
It's January.
At the Senior Bowl. Oh, man.
Zach, it's January.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Does not matter.
By the way, hasn't January felt like 3 months in one? Is that just because of the Bills games?
It's been a slow-moving month.
It really has.
Like, I mean, we were talking when we came in here. I was, you know, this week reading Senior Bowl previews. And in my head, I'm reading them and I'm going, guys, what are you doing? Like, it's like 3-4 weeks away. And then I'm like, wait a second. Practice starts tomorrow. And it's,
it's
been playing catch-up. The season only ended a week later than last year.
Mm-hmm.
It feels way different.
Yeah.
I think part of it was because we were waiting 3, 4, 5 weeks kind of just for the playoffs to begin. You kind of knew where you were going to be
really,
at.
We've really been waiting since November.
Yeah, and so then it's draft season really took a back seat where, I mean, it's years ago now. It used to start in November, though, where it's like, all right, who are the quarterbacks? Who are the big guys? Who's a top 15 player? Who are we looking at? Like, you knew what it was going to be. Now it's a little bit different, but I will tell you, Josh, looking at some of these guys, Ryan Fowler of the Draft Network, Field Yates, of course, like some of these big draft guys that we've had on the station or just nationally, talking about how good this defensive tackle class is.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. The Bills have a desperate need on the defensive line, and they've got 3 picks in the first 2 rounds right now. We'll see if there's any big trades for somebody like Max Crosby. I know Andrew Berry, the Browns GM, kind of kiboshed any ideas of a Myles Garrett trade. He does that now. We'll see what happens in March. But for right now, that's kind of been shut down. But I'm getting excited at like the idea of them being able to add some elite players on the defensive side, because they desperately need it. I know they spent a lot of draft capital in years past on the defensive side. It didn't necessarily work out.
None of it.
Yeah, really I was going to say, some of them way worse than others. Kyrie Elam has been a real, real miss. I'd argue the biggest miss of the Bean era, where others like Greg Rousseau are just solid players that you think if you could get one other guy on his opposite side, you're going to get more out of him. And that proved pretty true in the first half of Von Miller's first year. That proved pretty accurate.
The problem with that, though, is you expected Greg Rousseau to come in and be able to do that on his own.
Yeah,
you didn't expect him to come in and have to have someone with him. Now, it's fine if you want to have someone with him. Like you said,
it's never a bad thing.
It worked great with Von Miller when he first got here before his injury and everything like that. But I think the problem is the fact that you have made these big picks in the early rounds and then nothing else. It hasn't been like you're sprinkling the picks around the draft. Like, sure, you got Benford in, the 5th, 6th round. Mm-hmm. That was great. But Elam was a first-round pick. Rousseau was a first-round pick. That's like you're just taking swings in the first round and then kind of moving on from there. Sure, you're adding players in the later rounds, but it's not nearly as good as when you're adding other players on offense in the later rounds. The later rounds for offense have been awesome. I mean, James Cook was in the 2nd round. Sure, that's a little early on, but still.
Khalil Shakir was a
5th rounder. Gabe Davis was a 4th rounder. Like, there's a bunch of guys on offense that have really hit as the rounds have gone on, but it hasn't really gone that way on defense except for Christian Benford. And if you want to go back that far, you could go Matt Milano, but that's what feels like ages ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird. Like, where do you fit like the 3rd round of that? Is that still like the because they've done incredibly well in the 3rd round with Bernard and Spencer Brown, and then you've also had Dorian Williams.
Defense. Spencer Brown's offensive line.
Yep.
That's the thing. Like I said, you can look and find offensive players that have gone all over the place and have been key contributing members of the team. But when you look at the defense, sure, it's been balanced, but the talent has nowhere near been the same thing.
They've missed a lot in the first two rounds of the drafts pretty often. Just looking at the last three, starts with Elam in the first round of 22. That's been obviously a complete mess.
Bad.
They kind of saved themselves by getting Benford later in that draft in the sixth round. James Cook has – funny enough, that draft is maybe one of the more productive ones,
mm-hmm.
22.
Most of the players from that draft are on the team's team.
James Cook hits. Terrell Bernard hits. Khalil Shakir hits. Christian Benford hits.
Spencer Brown wasn't in that draft.
Brown is in 21.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But then you go to 23. Dalton Kincaid, I think up to this point, has been kind of a letdown.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say an outright miss, but a letdown.
Right, right.
From what you assumed you were getting, he was kind of pegged by the organization as, don't think of him as a tight end, he's more of just a pass catcher.
Well, everyone in the draft kind of put him into that category.
And that hasn't really been it at all. I think maybe on to that point, one of my most frustrating things with Kincaid, there's not necessarily stats to it, it's just whenever he seems to make a big play, it's the least convincing thing you've ever seen. The ball is moving. You're not really sure if he got 2 feet in. Recently this year, he had a big pass down the field. He dives, gets it. It's clearly moving. They had to rush up to get a playoff. It doesn't get challenged.
Yeah, right.
But he clearly didn't catch the ball. And then we all saw the 4th and 5 play. The all 22 angle makes it look way worse for Kincaid, where live you were like, maybe you didn't really have a chance. That one, he kind of half misreads it. It lands right in his belly and just, it pops right out.
I do think, though, on the whole misreading part of it, if you're Kincaid, your route is to keep going to the sideline.
Mm-hmm.
Allen is. And this isn't a detriment to Allen either, but Allen is just chucking that thing.
He just fires into a window.
He has to just kind of guess where Kincaid and even Mac Hollins as he rushes into frame two. He kind of has to guess where they are because he's got three guys about to tackle him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Kincaid probably anticipated, well, I'm going to keep running my route. He'll probably hit me on the sideline. Uh-oh.
Hey, the ball's coming now.
The ball's coming now. I got to turn around. Like, I don't knock him for that because I think – if you watch, he turns around like as the ball's being released.
He does catch that though.
I'm not excusing that. I'm trying to say though, like I'm excusing a little bit on the route running aspect of it.
Oh, okay.
Because the fact that if you watch when you time up where he turns to when Allen releases it, he turns almost instantly
mm-hmm.
and realizes, uh-oh, like he's not going to be able to get it where I think he is because he has three guys in his face.
Yeah.
So we've got
Kincaid in round one of 23. Torrence has, I think, started every single game of his first 2 years of his career at mm-hmm. right guard.
He's been
good.
Like last year was, I think, better. This year had its flaws.
Yeah.
But
he's ultimately starting right guard on a very good offensive line.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like
he'd be a starting right guard on most offensive lines.
Yeah, I don't think we're thinking about moving past him, so he's good. No. Dorian Williams, I think he's a very athletic outside linebacker. I think they mm-hmm. really like him, and he got him in the third round. And then this year, I think, has been slightly frustrating. Keon Coleman, where are we at with him? I think most of us kind of agree. Well, he can absolutely develop into a very serviceable player for the Bills and maybe even a guy that just stays on the roster for a number of years, even getting a second contract. I don't think any of us think he's ever going to become a number one receiver that is going to warrant having enough targets to get to like an 80, 90 catch season. I don't think that's ever going to happen. Cole Bishop flashes, but never really got to a point where he was your starting safety. That could be just due to Hamlin and Rapp were performing well enough that you didn't need to make the switch. But as a second-round pick, you would have liked to have seen more. Round three, Dwayne Carter, he had flashes, but we got to a point where he was inactive a lot towards the end of the year. Ray Davis, the fourth-round pick, is not bad by any means. He had real flashes mm-hmm. at times where he looked incredibly good. Didn't see anything from Van Prang Granger. He was obviously kind of somebody you sort of thought was more they got him for future uses potentially.
Yeah. And also, let's say the Connor McGovern thing didn't go as planned, right?
Right.
Then you have Van Prang Granger kind of waiting in the wings for when he's ready.
And we also know the Bills like to have a ton of offensive linemen
mm-hmm.
because they use guys. Alec Anderson is a 6th offensive lineman, swing tackle, swing, just everything that they use with offensive linemen, understandable. I mean, they end up taking 3 guys in this draft class. Eddie Ulufashio, he's more of a special teams guy at linebacker. Javon Solomon, I know a lot of us liked him, never really became too much, but he did have 2 sacks this year. Tylan Grable, another offensive lineman. Daquan Hardy, and then Travis Clayton. He, being their last pick, was sort of that part of that international group where we're going to start developing guys, kind of like what the Eagles did in, on the high end, Jordan Mailata. So they're kind of seeing that. And again, offensive linemen, they like to build them. And Aaron Cromer, as the offensive line coach, has done a wonderful job. But through these, you're looking at the top picks, though. It's, and I put it like this a few days ago, it's different levels of disappointing. Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid are not busts. They're not. Kyir Elam is. Kincaid, you can argue, has been disappointing. Although his rookie year, he broke a lot of Bills' records for tight ends. But his year two, injuries or not, has been relatively disappointing. You wonder what the chemistry level is between him and Allen. And I get nervous about that because you saw by the end of his rookie contract, there was clearly an issue between Gabe Davis and Josh Allen, not personally, but chemistry-wise.
Right.
It was, Gabe would go right when Josh is assuming he's going to go left. And there was a number of interceptions last year that came off that of Gabe's one-on-one. He decides to go one way. Josh is going the other.
Right. It was very apparent. Disaster. It was very apparent that was a problem in the Philly game.
The Philly game, yes.
That absolutely. That was where it really kind of started to rear its head a little bit.
And then with Keon Coleman, it was on draft day. Because it was not draft night. They traded back in the second round. But it was on draft day in the second round where it was, okay, you're getting a guy that most draft experts project better in the slot. You already have a slot, and he's a big slot, and you need an X guy. Oh, now you're saying he's going to be an X receiver. Okay, his separation stats are really bad. It got to the point where I was sitting there, you know, middle of the season, looking for anything to give us hope that Keon Coleman was developing into something. It never really got there. The Seattle game, I thought, was his best game. But a lot of it was more due to just he had a good game. It wasn't necessarily a sign of things to come. And the wrist injury, you could argue, maybe just stopped his development in his tracks for this year. And they kind of move forward with the running game.
It's almost like in hibernation, kind of.
Maybe it did. The Seattle game, though, was the last time, and maybe the only time, I felt real confidence of like, okay, he's coming along.
Was that, though, the fact that he was a matchup nightmare for, like, a Tariq Woolen? Like, was he just able to really be that bully wide receiver where he can just get up there and make catches? Because that's kind of what we all thought of him when he first came onto the scene of, like, oh, yeah, he's just going to beat guys to the ball because he's got that athletic ability to jump up and catch it. But it's not going to work against everybody. Like, imagine doing that against, like, a Marshawn Lattimore.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to be able to out-muscle Marshawn Lattimore. Right? Like, it depends on the – it's obviously, like, how you match up. But, like – and you're never going to have a perfect matchup every game. But you want a receiver that can adjust to those matchups. And I don't know if Coleman can.
Yeah,
how can he adjust?
I don't know if he has the skill set to do so.
Right.
But if you put somebody opposite him, faster, more of a separating guy, maybe stretch the field more, mm-hmm. I think then you can get a lot out of Keon Coleman.
I think that's what they wanted in Cooper, and it just didn't.
It never really materialized.
Right. It did a few times, but not really.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump in on the conversation we're having. The Bills draft history in the recent years. Some absolute hits, a lot of them in 22, although some, especially at the top, less so on that. Sal Capaccio, we expect to talk to him at 11:30. We'll see, though, if something happens. We are still waiting on confirmation on when Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean will speak with the media. They may do it together. They may do it separately. They may do it on the same day. They may do it on different days. We'll see. But for right now, we're expecting to speak with Sal Capaccio in just about an hour, talk more on the NFL, what comes next for the Bills, and really everything around that. We'll also maybe get into some coaching news across the NFL. The coaching cycle's all but wrapped up. Saints, the only team now to have to hire a head coach. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. That is brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it in Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. This is WGR.
Thompson moving the night. He's got two. Scores! He's got three! Hat trick for Tage Thompson! Let it rain! His seventh hat trick of his career.
Dan Dunleavy on the call there. Tage Thompson, hat trick. Very nice. JJ Paterka also getting himself a hat trick. Zach Benson scoring the seventh and final goal of the night for the Sabres. 7-2 win over the Boston Bruins. They take on Nashville on Friday for Rob Ray night as well. His ceremony as he gets put into the rafters will begin at 6 o'clock, and that will be right here on WGR. If you are not attending the game, you will be able to listen to that in its entirety. Should be a wonderful night. Rob Ray will be joining Shovel the Bulldog today at 4 p.m., so do stay tuned for that as well. We were just watching, Josh, we got ESPN on here, and Mad Dog Russo, I don't really care for him, but I kind of like the idea of like top five tortured NFL fan bases. He's got Bears at 5, Jets at 4, Vikings 3, Browns 2, Bills 1. I agree with Bills. I would have Vikings at 2. We were talking a little bit in the break. You have to have some level of like serious success to be tortured. I think there is some, because look who he doesn't have on there, Detroit. And yeah. I'd also, to a certain extent, take the Jets off that for that reason. You need to be successful and not get over the hump to be tortured. Outside of that, you're just a not good franchise.
But that's the thing.
I would take the Bears off that list. You've won a Super Bowl already.
Yeah, but the thing is like, I think you look at the Bears, the Jets, and the Browns, you also have to think about organizationally, they are extremely dysfunctional.
I think that might be why we don't have the sound on here, obviously. Right. That might be why the Bears are on there. Is, yes, mm-hmm. they have won a Super Bowl, but you look at how they're run and how did that even happen?
The Jets have won a Super Bowl. Granted, I know it was
Super Bowl III, yeah.
Yeah, right. I understand that. But I look at those three teams, the Browns, the Jets, and the Bears. They're different from the Bills and the Vikings because the Bills and the Vikings are the only two teams to lose in four Super Bowls. Obviously, the Bills in four straight and everything else that's going on now with the Bills. Mm-hmm. Like, yep. There's a lot going on there. But with the Browns, the Jets, and the Bears, the Browns fans have quarterback jerseys that have 15 names on them.
So good. So good.
The Jets, every single year, get hyped up to something new and then immediately get let down. The Bears, it's okay, this GM's out. Now the coach and the quarterback are going to pick the new one. And then, oh, now that coach is out. So now the GM and the quarterback are going to, oh, the quarterback's out. Oh, it's a revolving door. It's been a revolving door for 20 years or more for the Bears. Like, there are so many things, so many layers to this where I get why Detroit should also be on this list. But I think it's just that they're all in the same boat in the sense of the torture is not the fact that you haven't had success. It's the fact that you haven't had success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, you are, it's not that you had success once and you're never getting back there. It's that you've never even tasted success. You've never even come close to it. That's why I think the Browns are at 2.
Yeah, the Browns, they show too, like, you've been the bridesmaid to John Elway's The Drive, you know, mm-hmm. like Ernest Byner's fumble, like,
yep.
You're right.
And again, you're drafting all of these quarterbacks that are the next big thing. Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield.
Tim Couch,
like, I can't even name them all because
Let's go.
There's so many of them.
Brandon Whedon. There we go. Like, 28-year-old
Deshaun
rookie.
Watson.
Yeah, like, selling your soul to go get Watson. Yeah. That's its own level of, like,
And then having Jameis Winston be better almost instantly.
I'm just more fun.
Yeah.
Just flat out more fun.
And a lot less controversy. But, like, that's the other thing, too. Again, it goes to the ownership of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears, the Jets, and the Browns all have terrible ownership groups that can't make a decision. They can't make a right decision if it was the only decision.
I think that's why, though, I would have the Bills and Vikings at 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Is because it just feels like you just fall short. The other teams, you could argue, like, you're not really that close.
Sure.
Like, you've had moments. The Jets, the AFC Championship runs in the early 2010s with Mark Sanchez and Rex Ryan. But ultimately, like, they were getting there off of vibes and really good defensive performances. Mark Sanchez,
Darrell Revis was one of the best, if not the best, cornerback in the NFL.
Mark Sanchez was never winning a Super Bowl, and I think even Jets fans at the time were telling you that. They just wanted to make the game.
Mm-hmm.
Browns, where are we at? Just make the game. The Bears are a little bit different. They want to get back to what they were in 85.
Right.
Because 85, that kind of run in the 80s there was just so magnetic. I mean, you had such big personalities. You were genuinely different on defense than anybody else. You had so many high-profile stars. And then Walter Payton's there, of course, Mike Ditka's, you know, your coach. Like, the Bears,
it's an iconic time period.
It's an iconic time period, and it's, you know, if you ask Bears fans, like, da Bear, like, everything.
All the SNL stuff.
All 85.
Right.
It's all 85. And I think that's a big part of it, too, is, like, they have that one year that was great, where for the Bills and Vikings, it's constant of just heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak. Great teams that arguably should have been in the Super Bowl. Like, the Bills, you could argue at 1-2, it's not just the four Super Bowls. It's you somehow get the most physically gifted quarterback of all time in the same generation that maybe the Michael Jordan of the sport is playing in.
Mm-hmm.
And you're playing second fiddle to them.
Right after a 17-year playoff drought.
Yeah, you have the drought, you know, but all that. But then you were good right before the Super Bowls began. You were really good in the 60s.
Yeah.
And the Super Bowl start and you fall off.
Yeah.
You know, and there's even stuff too of, like, your great members of your franchise. O.J. Simpson. for all of our lives, we really couldn't look at OJ other than the guy that maybe got away with murder, quote unquote, maybe. That's tough. I mean, that's one of your greatest franchise players of all time, and you can't really talk about him. Mm-hmm. Where the Vikings, I mean, it's a little bit different. I've always seen the Vikings as the Bills NFC equivalent.
Yeah.
They do stuff differently,
sure.
But ultimately, it's cold weather. It's kind of the same fans. We all tailgate. There's a similar mindset to how we go. And really, up until the Bills got Josh Allen, they were kind of the same thing as the Vikings, where it was piecemealing quarterbacks together since Fran Tarkenton. You maybe have one or two years where it's like, oh, we've maybe got something here, and then it falls apart. The Bills kind of ran into some ownership issues. The Vikings never had that. But the Vikings, they were just always the second fiddle to whoever was great in the NFC at the time. Whether it be you go back to the 60s and 70s, you were sort of the second fiddle to the Cowboys at the time with Roger Staubach. And then you got to Super Bowls, and you were just the second fiddle to like great teams of the decade. The Steelers, the Dolphins, the Chiefs' first Super Bowl is a blowout against the Vikings. The Raiders even finally get over that hump. They get over it because of you. And it's just abysmal Super Bowl performances for them. They haven't gotten back since 76. And then from then on, it's been a heartbreaking playoff loss after heartbreaking playoff loss. You go to the conference championship in 87 against Washington. If you want to go back to 98 with Randy Moss and Randall Cunningham, you fall to a Falcons team you had no business losing to. They were a team that didn't make the playoffs the year prior, go 14-2, and I think go right back down to not making the playoffs the next year. 2009, you get Brett Favre, arguably putting up his best season ever. 33 touchdowns, 7 picks. Josh, Brett Favre threw 7 picks in a season. That's a miracle. That is a miracle.
Yeah.
And yet, what does he do in the biggest moment? Throws a terrible interception in the NFC Championship game that sends the Saints to the Super Bowl. I'm not saying you'd necessarily beat the Colts.
But you never know.
But you get there, and there's a chance.
Right.
And then look at this year. Just this year now.
Yeah, they have all this regular season success. Sam Darnold revitalizes his career.
Yep, but you're second fiddle to Detroit. You maybe found something in Darnold, and then the last 2 weeks of the year, you lose the division to Detroit, and then he takes 1,000 sacks against the Rams.
And falls apart completely.
And he falls apart completely. You lose in the wild card game. 14 wins, you don't even win a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
You maybe have something in J.J. McCarthy, but even if you asked a lot of Vikings fans, the fact that he got hurt before the season began after having glimpses in the playoffs, or sorry, in the preseason, that he was maybe going to be something, and then in the middle of this year, I think it was ultimately a cleanup job, but I'm also a J.J. McCarthy apologist, openly that. If you asked Vikings fans now, that surgery is a sign that, nope, he's never going to be the guy that we drafted. There was promise. There was the deep touchdown in the preseason. We thought we had it, and now it's gone. And even then, too, it's like our division is a buzzsaw. It's a complete and utter buzzsaw. Like, what are we supposed to do? We won 14 games, came in second. What are we supposed to do with that? They're in a tough spot. Even go back to 22. They won 13 games.
Mm-hmm.
They had like a negative point differential or whatever that was season.
Yeah, that was the year where it was like the crazy catch by Justin Jefferson against the Bills.
Yeah.
And it was like, how are they winning games?
Yeah, they lost to Daniel Jones in the playoffs at home. there's a lot there, I think, for both Buffalo and Minnesota. I think those are the two most tortured fan bases in NFL football. Because for me, you have to know some look at Detroit right now, how their fans are reacting to their two coordinators leaving for head coaching jobs. They're acting like they've been stabbed in the back.
Yeah.
And partially they're acting like that because the last guy they lost was Don Shula when Kennedy was president. So, like, I get it. Like, it's been a while since you've experienced this.
I need to know when the first Bears game is in Detroit this coming
season. Oh, for next year? Yeah, I can't wait for that schedule.
That's going to be an insane game.
But
is Ben Johnson going to get a standing ovation?
Not how they've acted this offseason. No, probably not.
Yeah.
Probably
is he going to even get a video tribute? Or are they just going to put up a graphic that says, thanks?
I think we're closer to that. I think we're closer to thanks.
It's not even just, thanks, Ben Johnson. Thanks.
Here, like, even go to 2017, too. You have the Minneapolis Miracle, Stephon Diggs, maybe his highlight of his career. And then you go to Philadelphia, lose 38-7 in the NFC Championship.
Yeah,
it's not even a contest.
Stomped on. Yeah.
Not even a contest.
Yeah.
And that's 13-win season, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've had great success and absolutely nothing, arguably, to show for it. So I think the Bills and the Vikings are maybe the most tortured fan bases. I know we're talking on a Buffalo radio station. I'd probably put Minnesota 1 and Buffalo 2. because the same thing. Buffalo went through a 17-year playoff drought. Minnesota's had playoff seasons. They've had these 13-win seasons with wildly different organizations and teams a part of it. And they've got, they don't even have a Super Bowl appearance to show for it since 76 or whenever that was. 803-0550, the number to call. Had a little bit of fun there. We'll get to your calls after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mitten here, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mitten hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Faccio hopefully will be joining with us at 11:30. We're still waiting on what day Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott will be speaking with the media. It's got to be some point this week, Josh, right? It's got
to
be some point.
I think it was like, it's like anticipated today, maybe? I don't
we'll
know,
see.
Maybe tomorrow.
We'll find out.
It's going to be today or tomorrow. It's got
to
be.
Yeah. But while we're waiting, let's get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We start off the morning here with Dan on the line. Dan, how are we doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
Doing good.
Hey, I got a thought that's going to keep me hopeful throughout this off season.
There we go.
And that is what's going on out west with the Chargers, Broncos, Raiders. You know, they all now have much improved coaches and programs, and I think Denver's going to be give Kansas City some trouble, as will the Chargers. And you put Pete Carroll into Las Vegas, they'll be pesky. So here's my dream is that Kansas City next year, maybe they won't win the division and have to go route of wild card, which is nice to think about. And, if it takes a little while for Vrabel to turn around the Patriots and, Miami stays a mess and the Jets do their thing, it looks like it could be set up well.
Dan, I like where your head's at, man. Yeah, thanks for the call, man. I like where your head's at. This is a thing, when you always look at the Patriots dynasty and why it was able to, essentially become two dynasties. Trista Crick joined Chilton the Bulldog yesterday, and that's kind of how she talked about it, where it was, it's not one. There were periods there. They had the early 2000s one, then the late 2010s one.
Mm-hmm.
They were different. But they were able to have that sustained success because, the AFC East was garbage. You had fleeting moments where Chad Pennington was good with Miami. We've already mentioned the Rex Ryan, Mark Sanchez, Jets teams. The Bills never really were much of a factor until the end where,
right.
Josh Allen had arrived and stuff like that, or even the 2017 playoff year. That's a good point on the AFC West, where now they all have really good coaches who have shown they have NFL success, and now two of them, Denver and the Chargers, clearly have their quarterbacks. They both made the playoffs this year, and I'd argue for both of them, it was not a year ahead of schedule, but very clear
it
needs. Yeah, and there were very clear needs that I think they'll be able to get a hold of this year moving forward. And it's not even necessarily for me the Chiefs losing the division. That could absolutely happen, sure. It's more the idea of they've got to deal with that. Baltimore's got to deal with the entirety of the AFC North, mainly Cincinnati and Pittsburgh will always be just a pain, even if they're not ultimately good by the end of the year. They're going to be a pain. You know
right,
that.
Right.
And then for right now, the AFC East feels like it's in a window where the Jets could be going into a full rebuild with Aaron Glenn and kind of restarting the culture there. Miami looks like they're going to be soon getting rid of Mike McDaniels and starting over potentially completely there.
I mean, they're just like, it feels dead in the water.
And then we'll see about the Patriots. We've already mentioned, their draft last year outside of May was not good. I like Vrabel a lot. They have a ton of cap space. That doesn't mean immediate success.
Right. But it does mean that you have, it looks like they have the quarterback. It looks like they have the coach, potentially. And obviously, Josh McDaniels has had no success as a head coach elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But as a coordinator in
he's been great. Yeah,
New
been
England,
great.
He's been awesome. But now you're going to see him without Belichick for the first time. So there is, potential there. But even then, it's 2-3 years at least down the road.
Yep, where the Bills now have kind of gone through their transition year into a more sustained, okay, this is the team we're going to have. We've already mentioned it. Outside of, I think, maybe a few free agent pieces, maybe a big trade, and then the draft picks, I think it's going to be, for the most part, the similar roster without, not saying they're not going to tweak things. They need a boundary wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
They need help at the edge. They need help on the defensive line.
They need help on the secondary.
Michael tweets in here, too, when we were talking about the draft, thoughts on Derek Harmon, the defensive tackle out of Oregon in the first, Jack Sawyer, the edge rusher or outside linebacker out of Ohio State, and then a secondary receiver from there. I'm sick and tired of having a non-existent pass rush. And, brother, let me tell you, that's everybody. I'm right there with you, man. There's too many times. And a lot of it, I'm listening to the broadcast over the radio with Chris Brown and Eric Wood, I kind of get a prelude to what's going to happen. The amount of times I've just heard no pressure. Or you know, tons of time. It's even,
yeah.
even on
tons of time is the one that kind of always gets me. I'm like, ugh.
Even on blitzes too, you'll hear a ran and they picked up the blitz and it's like, oh my gosh, like come on, like let's go. And I know there were good pressure rates. I think Greg Rousseau was top 15 in pressure rates.
Mm-hmm. Vaughn was even getting pressures,
but it never felt like it. They just don't have enough difference makers on the defense. I have no idea if Jack Sawyer's a great player at Ohio State. I know he ruined Texas this season, so. Lovely, great.
Imagine he's on the Bills and he does wonders for the next year. How would you feel?
I'll forget about it. Arch Manning's quarterback of Texas. We're good. We're fine. Ryan Wingo's a wide receiver. He's going to be great. Haven't even touched Transportal yet. It's going to be fine. But Derek Harmon, specifically, defensive tackle out of Oregon. I've seen his name a lot connected. Just not even with the Bills, late first round guys. And this defensive tackle class seems to be the best it's been in years at that position. Another guy I've really liked, Walter Nolan out of Ole Miss, is someone I've also kind of started to look at. And then if you want edge rushers as well, some of these other guys have started to kind of pick up on, mainly due to that, their Senior Bowl. Mike Green out of Marshall led the FBS in sacks, 17. Very quick riser this year. He was kind of a non-factor to start this year, transfer from Virginia, and then just consensus All-American, the Sun Belt Player of the Year, the whole thing. And then another one, James Pierce, the edge rusher out of Tennessee. Don't really know where he's going to fall, though. He seems to be like that SEC-type athlete where he scares the hell out of you. Don't know necessarily, though, if he's going to be like a top 15 or if he's a first or just an overall first-round pick. We'll see how that develops. But the Senior Bowl practices continue today and tomorrow with the game on Saturday. Draft season, it comes on you real fast, especially when you're a good team. 803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to join the show. Zach Jones, Josh Mint hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mint, hour number two of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Taking your calls, 803-0550, the number two call. We're hoping to hear from Sal Capaccio in the next half hour or so. Still waiting on when Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean will speak, whether it be separately or together, different days or on the same day. We'll get that information to you when we know it definitively. But let's go back to the phones here and get connected to our fans. Brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We start off this segment with Tom on the line. Tom, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well.
I hear a lot of talk about Crosby, but nothing about Khalil Mack. He's mm-hmm. a free agent.
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting one. Thanks for the call. I think the difference is he's kind of, it seems like, on the backswing of his career. I think he's ultimately mentioned too, you know, I think there's been rumblings about maybe a retirement there. There is a difference in age. Khalil Mack's going to be 34 in February, and he does seem to be on the downswing of his career. Just going off sack numbers, 23 with the Chargers, 17 seem to be return to form. It's a career high for him, but in between that, from 2019 to 2024, only had one season above 10 sacks. It was last year. This past season, playing in 16 games, had 6 sacks. Again, that's just going off that number, but even tackles for loss, 2023 he had 21, 22 he had 12. Last year he had 6, and again, 34 years old, but it would be much cheaper than trading for somebody like Max Crosby, who he himself is 27, 28 years old, and in 12 games played this year had 7.5 sacks, and the last 2 years, 12.5, 14.5. He has been a serious problem. Tackles for loss as well have been way up there, 22, 23, 17. QB hits, 36, 31, 20. You know, he's one of the best players at his position in the NFL. I think that's maybe a big reason why Khalil Mack was one of the best players at his position. He arguably is not that anymore, but was that for a very long time. I would be all for it, though, in the sense of give him a one-year deal and maybe draft another edge rusher as well to go along with him, to have maybe Mack here for a year and then go into the next season or two with somebody different, playing opposite with Rousseau and Epinesa and those guys that they already have. I think that would be a really good move if they were to go for Mack.
I think it'd be really fun, too, just the fact that, of you know, he played at UB, he got drafted out of here.
We fixed the failings of 2014.
Yeah, like I just think I think it'd be fun. Like, the story behind it and everything like that, too, would be awesome. But
it would definitely be a fun aspect of free agency in the offseason of, like, hey, you know, it's your first time back in Buffalo. Well, not, you know, it's not like you've avoided the city since, but, like, you know, first time playing in Buffalo since you were UB Bowl. Like, how's that feel? You know, he's credited UB a lot. He is still kind of the face of that football program.
Right.
Whenever, over a decade later.
Yeah, if you think about UB or if you ask someone about UB, they know Khalil Mack came from there.
Yep,
so that's
100%.
Also kind of a bit of a draw there. So, like, obviously, not on the field stuff, but, like, outside of that. But you got to find help where you can, right? Like, I don't fully love it just because of the fact that, like, it just feels like another cork in a hole. Like, you're plugging a boat that's leaking in 100 different places, and you are plugging a hole, but, like, it's not...
It's not a long-term solution.
Right. It's just a Band-Aid on a crack in the foundation of your house. Like, it really needs to be, you get him here, and he's kind of, like, just a helper for a little bit. Because
do you remember his first season in Chicago in 2018? Like, he gets traded there real late in the process, and is just a force of nature.
Yeah.
His first game, would he have, like, two fumbles, a fumble return for a touchdown, like, two sacks? I mean, he's absurd. He was really good that first year in Chicago. Also fit the Bears like a glove in terms of, like, he's going to be an elite defensive player.
If only he was there now.
And they probably love him now,
That part has always interested me, too, because of his just, like his career track and, like, where he's done well in relation to, like, when he's left. Like, the Raiders never really got better after he left, but...
No, they did not.
When he left Chicago, that was kind of the start of the uptick. They're not, you know, good or anything, because they're still figuring it out, but they started in the right direction after he left, and now if he leaves L.A., they're also headed in the right direction, so it feels like... Unfortunately for him, everywhere he's leaving is kind of getting better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's getting there, like, right place, wrong time sort of thing. But if he comes to Buffalo, I think it'll be the exact opposite of that, where it is still the right place, but it's also the right time.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go next to Alan on the line. Alan, you're on WGR.
Yeah, I just got about four comments and quickly, and I'll hang up. Number one, if you remember, and I don't know if you guys go back, when Reed was in Philly, at the end of his career, he was horrible there. He got fired, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And he won a division, a couple divisions. He got to a championship game, but he was the Marty Schottenheimer everybody used to call him. He comes to Kansas City. They draft a few years later, they got Mahomes. Mahomes, without him, Reed would win 10 games a year, maybe. The same thing with Allen. I think without Allen, McDermott and the Bills win 6 to 7 games because that's how much he means to this team. My other point is this. If you look at that, a couple of things I'm just kind of bouncing. The other, at the end of the game, that blitz that Spagnuolo threw, that's the exact same blitz he threw against Allen in Buffalo. And Allen seemed to get out of that run for the touchdown. Nance called the play of the year. And if you read, and he talked about that, too, after postgame, that just time they didn't pick it up, that time they did. And it's just a matter of two different times. But another thing, too, everybody's saying Allen with the last drive. Yeah. But come on, four games against Kansas City, they're giving up 31-plus points a game, and they're averaging almost under 29. With that, if you look at that, that's my whole point. I mean, you can't put that on Allen. You got to make some stops. But I feel going into next year, I think we're a much better situation than we were last year. I don't know how good Miami's going to be. I can't see the Jets or the Patriots being that great, maybe 7-8 wins. I mean, I can't. I mean, everybody thought, oh, you know, Rodgers. I mean, they're on, you know, they were picked to be ahead of the Bills by a lot. But I just think, you know, another loss this year was really frustrating. But I'm a big Orioles fan, and I just want to share this with you. I get a lot of Ravens stuff. I don't know how I do that.
Mm-hmm.
They are very unhappy with the fact that Lamar can't get over the hump.
Oh, yeah. They are not thrilled with John Harbaugh at all.
No, I just read a comment. I got an update that Harbaugh can't get Lamar over the hump, and they don't believe Lamar's going to get that Super Bowl. That's just same kind of thinking. Now, here we have a lot of hope with Allen. I mean, Manning, after 9 years, finally got to the Super Bowl, and then Allen's stats are much better than Manning's were after 7 years. So, but, I mean, you would be shocked if you heard some of the things coming out from Baltimore about Lamar, and he's 3-5 in the playoffs. Allen is 7-6. I trade him in a heartbeat for Allen. So we only hear what we hear here, but I just want to hang up and listen to you. Take care.
Allen, thanks for the call, man. Yeah, the Reed situation is always kind of a fun one to look back at because It is weird. It's tough to compare him necessarily to McDermott in terms of, you know, even the Marty Schottenheimer comparisons. I do know in 2013, his first year with Kansas City, they go 11-5. They've got Alex Smith, and they lose to Indianapolis in that wild card game that they led by a ton of points, and it's a roaring comeback by Luck and T.Y. Hilton, and it's a second half, you know, storming.
Yeah.
And it's arguably Luck's greatest moment in his career. He does get to an AFC championship. Ultimately, that's Deflategate, by the way. But but arguably, his greatest moment as a Colt is that wild card game against Kansas City. But to Reed, that was like, of course. Why would he not lose that game? That's Andy Reid. And you look back at his early Eagles success. The Eagles, for a while, were the Bills just, instead of getting to Super Bowls, they lost in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
His first year in 99, they go 5-11, and then for the next 5 years, they make the playoffs. 11-5, they lose to the Giants in the division round. Then it's the championship game run, where they go to four straight championship games. They ultimately only win one. They lose in 0-1 to sort of the last years of the greatest show on turf, the Rams. Then they lose to the 2002 Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that great defense with, I think, Brad Johnson was their quarterback. And then 2003, they lose to the Jake Delhomme, Steve Smith Carolina Panthers. They're losing to different teams in each of these. Then they eventually get through in 04 when they get T.O., and then they lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Then it's a bit of a downswing for them. They ultimately do make another NFC Championship game in 2008. They lose to Kurt Warner on the Cardinals' kind of miracle run to the Super Bowl, where they ultimately lose to Pittsburgh. And then it's a real bad run for him, and that's ultimately the last season he wins a playoff game in Philly is 08. They lose in the wild card round in 09 and 10, and then they don't make the playoffs in 2011 with an 8-8 record. And that's actually the dream team, too, by the way, for the Eagles. Their backup quarterback, Vince Young, is the one that gives them the name. It's not Mike Vick. And then 2011, they go 4-12, and he's fired. And that's why I've always, with the Reed and McDermott comparisons, it's not totally true, because you're missing the point of when Reed was fired. He was not fired after making a ton of NFC championship games and not getting there or not getting over the hump.
He was fired after doing all that and then falling apart.
Yeah, and then eventually, you know, the quote-unquote message got stale and stuff like that, and he was there for a long time, from 99 to 2012.
Right.
He's there for a long time.
If you think about it, like, let's say this year was more of a year in transition. The Bills go 8-8 or, mm-hmm. you know, 9-7 or something like that, and then next year it continues down. Then it's the same kind of track. Then it's the same sort of mindset, except instead of the conference games, it's the divisional round.
Yeah. And so with McDermott, that's the thing. We've all talked about it. In this run, when Allen has been the guy, so let's not look at Jacksonville, let's not look at Houston. When Allen has been the guy, so 2020 on, it's been the Chiefs and a single year where it's been Cincinnati.
Yep.
And that single year in Cincinnati, I know it's an excuse, but it's where I'm at. That team ran out of gas.
Yep. There was a lot going on.
Everything went on in that season. They were done. They were shot. They weren't winning a Super Bowl that year. They just weren't.
And there was also all the stuff that looked like something was happening with Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, we'll never know what the locker room conversations were actually like, but it all kind of boils over to next year, and then we see how that all ends.
Yeah.
So there definitely was something else also going on there off the field in terms of locker room strife.
Yeah.
Like that there's all sorts of things going on in that Bengals year where it's like, you know, it's tough. But yeah.
I don't totally know about the blitz. Hearing Osiris Torrance talk about it.
I went back and I found the dots for that game in week 11. It was, sorry, Allen, but it was the exact opposite of the blitz. Like, nothing like that.
Remember,
I'm looking at the dots right now. When Allen decides to take off, three defensive linemen for the Chiefs are heavily, like, they are contained by the rest of the Bills' offensive line, and the right tackle, or I'm sorry, the one edge rusher, I can't tell who it is here, Spencer Brown's got him locked up, and that's when Allen takes off. All of the safeties and corners are staying home. There's a guy on Cooper. There's a guy on Shakir. The safeties drop back. Like, there's no blitz.
From what I remember of that, too, it was Chris Jones ad-libbing and ultimately getting got
by
Torrance, and it was Ryan Vandermark. Spencer Brown misses that game. Where this one, Torrance mentioned that.
Wait.
That.
Who? Oh, sorry. Yep, I see now.
But it was Torrance mentioning that they didn't typically blitz like that.
Mm-hmm.
That they were expecting something entirely different to what they'd seen on tape all year, and that's what kind of got them.
Yeah.
Is that the Chiefs legitimately were, you know, if it's to be believed now from what the Bills are saying, legitimately were hiding stuff until the playoffs.
Now, I will say, though, when you look back at the beginning of the snap, or the beginning of the play, the way they're lined up, it looks exactly the same. The way that the Chiefs lined up defensively on this play where Allen runs in for the touchdown in week 11, the defense is built exactly the same as it was on that blitz at the end of the game against the Chiefs in the playoff game. The safeties and the corners are right up on the line, and then they immediately drop out. In the playoff game, they didn't. And that's what got the Bills.
They are right there, though. I mean, they did not play all that great of a game, and they were right there at the end. You're dealing with the dynasty of our time right now in the NFL. Arguably, I mean, if they win the Super Bowl against the Eagles, I think they're in arguably the best dynasty the NFL has seen, especially with the quarterback play in the AFC and the teams they've had to play. The fact that for a multiple of these Super Bowls, they've had to come back down late in the fourth quarter, they've just been so unbelievably impressive. But deeply frustrating, because unlike the Patriots, it feels like the Chiefs are, and they are actively keeping you from multiple Super Bowl chances. Yesterday, I think it was Ross Tucker, or maybe it was Trista Crick, brought up the idea of, like, how many Super Bowl appearances do you think the Bills have if they were in the NFC?
Oh.
And it was just kind of like instinctively.
Yeah, I think
probably Trista.
I was listening.
It was like, probably a few.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a few.
Oh, easily. I mean, think about the competition they would have to go up against.
Yeah.
Like, it's you'd have to get past the 49ers and
the Eagles.
And maybe the Rams.
So you're getting past Brock Purdy / Jimmy Garoppolo, if we're going to the later years, and Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Instead, you're locked in the Thunderdome that is the AFC, where every year it just is like, oh, this guy's putting up historic numbers that we've never seen before in our lives. And his team went 9-8. I'm talking about Joe Burrow when I say that. I mean, and then you have Lamar and Josh doing the same thing, putting up numbers we haven't seen before.
Yep.
And they're duking it out. And then there's the Chiefs doing the exact same thing. Next up on the line is Scott. Scott, you're on WGR. How are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I just had to say, I was a season ticket holder for 27 years. We had six tickets. And this year, it's just so frustrating, but I'm not mad. You know, it's like the caller before, if Andy Reid didn't have Mahomes, well, guess what? If Norwood was 5 feet to the left, we're holding the Lombardi. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And to sit here, I mean, I give you guys all the credit because I couldn't do your job. I know you're getting paid, but, I mean, four Super Bowls, 17 years, 20 years looking at Brady, seven and counting looking at Mahomes. I mean, God love the fans in this town. I was born and raised here, but I'm really, you know, like some other friends of mine, they're really done now. And, you know, when people say, well, you know, it's transition. Well, what does that matter? Or, you know, looking at other teams that haven't made it. It doesn't matter. We were there. And I think the search, you know, people, I know you guys got to talk about it for the next year, but is a draft choice going to get us closer to 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1 or 13 seconds? I mean, those things aren't in the draft. And Bass's kick last year, you know, he just missed it. So there's 31 teams that aren't good enough every year, you know, and I just give the fans a lot of credit for staying in there. I'm going to enjoy it because at least through October, the golf courses are pretty open on Sundays, and that's what I'm going to be doing, man. I can't invest it anymore. And, you know, it's like I think you guys had it the other day. There's a lot of people that are so frustrated. I mean, they're not even watching the bowl. They're like, and it's not just the Chiefs, just fatigue of football. I just think it's been so long in this town, and if you're cursed or whatever, it is what it is. You know, no reason to get super mad at players, but that's all I had to say, so thank you.
Scott, thanks for the comment. I totally get it. I think about this a lot, too. I think as much as many of us will miss it, like come like March, April, especially the draft, we'll be like, all right, football, let's go, baby. Let's go. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Like I've had my few months off.
Yeah.
I think it's also a blessing where we do have 7-8 months off from football. Where I mean, there's little activities here and there, but you have
mini
a moment.
Camp, training camp.
Yeah,
and
the hope and can start to marinate again. Because, I mean, yeah, we're 3 days off of an AFC championship loss in which you were right there. I totally understand where Scott's feeling. Mm-hmm. But I also think a draft choice or two – it can change it. The Bills were getting stops in the second half. If they had a better edge rusher that maybe they get in the draft,
yeah,
that forces a stop in the first half, gets them off a third down, because that was a huge problem this year, I think it's different. Look at the Chiefs right now. Rashee Rice. I heard a lot of people here on the station too talking about like Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy next year. Hold the phone. He has 8 felonies, and the league has multiple times shown you they will suspend guys a year later. Von Miller is one of them. I don't anticipate Rashee Rice playing much of, if any, of the year next year with Worthy. But you look to them, Worthy came on in the second half of the year for the Chiefs. He made a massive difference for them. I mean, that it was a huge difference. Where for the Bills, Keon Coleman, Dalton Kincaid necessarily didn't. But if Kincaid was just a little bit better, does he maybe come up with that catch late in the game? Then all of a sudden, it's not 4th and 5. You're in field goal range if he catches that. Or right. At least, I mean, that's where the line was. The target line. Yeah. You're right there, and you've got more than enough time to – you're not focusing on, all right, well now we got to kick field. No, you're still driving.
Mm-hmm. You have lots of time. You have 2 timeouts. There's a lot going on there. But I also – I look at, you know, Kincaid specifically, and I understand you catch the ball with your hands, but he has 2 big issues in his knees. Like that was
definitely a
contributing factor to some of this stuff too. But now he has the whole offseason to get healthy. To go back to your point about third downs – that's something where I look at the defense as a whole, not necessarily the players, but like, and obviously the players play a part in this, but like the scheme itself, how the Bills are trying to stop teams on third down. We talked about this a little bit before the show, and I think you were right in this. If they have an elite edge rusher like 2022 Von Miller in the beginning of the season before he gets hurt, the Bills are way more effective on third down. But I do also think that the fact that you're relying on one guy or maybe 2 guys to come up with a big stop on third down, it's not a great plan. It can be foolproof if you have 1 or 2 of those guys that can always get you the stop. But what do you do if those guys aren't there? What if you do if those guys are off the field? What if they're hurt? What if, you know, they're neutralized for that day? What's your backup plan? How else are you going to stop teams on third down? That's the thing for me where I look at there's tiny bits of these of McDermott's defensive scheme where, for the most part, since he's been here, it has been foolproof. It's been one of the best defenses in the NFL. It's been awesome.
Yeah.
How do you figure out the parts that are starting to crack? How do you figure out third down defense and get to that point where you're not going to be worried about it every time it's out on the field? You're not going to be worried about, oh, are they really going to just give him third down again? Like, what are we doing here?
It's 3rd and 8, and it feels like 3rd and inches.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that's the thing. I understand the secondary is a lot different than when McDermott first got here. And again, like I said, it kind of relies heavily on those edge rushers. So if you can get one, your problems are in the large part go away. But you kind of want to have more than one plan for a very important moment in every single drive, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of where I'm at this point.
Yeah,
if you have a better plan there, then you get off the field quicker, and you can give your offense, you can give your MVP level quarterback more time to go do what he can do best. And you also probably won't have to have him score 35 points or more per game to win the game because you're keeping the other team off the field.
It is wild, though, looking at that. And this is something I brought up late last week. The Chiefs were off also a horrendous third down defense.
Yeah.
And I think most would argue they have better high-end talent on defense than the Bills. They were also abysmal. Both were like 28th and 29th, respectively. Yeah.
I think the Chiefs were 26th, but still.
Oh, yeah. But like they were both terrible on third down defense.
Yeah.
And then, funny enough, both were great at third down conversions on offense. Next up on the line, Sean joins us. Sean, how are we doing this morning?
Good morning, guys. I think you guys just started to hit like how I feel. Bean is great in the later rounds in the drafts. And I'm not saying the first and second round draft picks haven't been contributors, but they are not. We haven't got that game changer. I mean, you know, Kincaid was supposed to be, you know, the Travis Kelce per se.
Yeah.
You know, Coleman just, he was hurt for a few weeks, but he's still not that game changer. Now, he may turn into that, but our first and second round, I mean, we haven't made it. And our offense has gotten those first and second rounds picks the last couple of years, and we still haven't really lit it up. I mean, you know, that we're just not finding the game changers. Bean, he finds good players, good character guys, that they seem to fit in and may contribute. They contribute, but they don't change things. Now, this year, are they going to go defense? Probably, right? I mean, we definitely need another corner.
We were talking about a lot of line.
I mean, but, you know, they tried safety. Bishop, again, contributing towards the end of the year, not a game changer, not lighting it right up. And I'm not, you know, it's tough picking 30th, right? But that's where he seems like he's missing. Game changers in the top of the draft. I mean, obviously, Elam has probably been his, might have been his biggest bust, right?
Yep. But without a doubt, I mean, yeah.
I think that's where Bean misses in the first round. They seem to, the later round draft picks, they seem to nail it. I mean, they contribute, more than they don't, right? But the first and second round, we really need a game changer if we're going to help Allen right now.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for the call. And I'm glad you brought this point up. I, you know, looking back at the Chiefs and Bills, both their draft history.
They're kind of the exact opposite of each other.
For right now. Because you look back a few years ago, not that long ago, that was the Chiefs.
Yeah.
They weren't hitting on these first-round, second-round guys. You're looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Willie Gay Jr., but they hit L'Jarius Sneed in the fourth round. Then you go to 2019, Mecole Hardman's kind of a miss. He was okay for them, not great. Juwan Thornhill, he kind of hit for them, but then their third-round picks, it kind of nothing. Lucas Niang, he's okay. They have real big problems on the offensive line. And then 21, it seemed to kind of switch with Nick Bolton and Creed Humphrey both in the second round. Those two are absolutely two of their better players. 22, McDuffie, George Karlaftis. They did, though, massively miss on Sky Moore. Massively miss. That's one of their biggest busts they've had up to this point. 23, Felix Azua. He's another edge rusher. He's been useless. 2 years, three sacks. Karlaftis, only a year behind him, 24 and a half sacks. They play the same position.
Yeah.
And then this year, Xavier Worthy. You know, that's kind of a hit for them. Also in 23 as well, Rashee Rice. They've sort of kind of flipped the script on them where they weren't really hitting all that much. The Bills, we've kind of talked to it to death, and we've got to get to a break here. But hopefully you kind of see a switch that the Chiefs made where they're not just hitting these late-rounders. Now all of a sudden the switch happens, and they're starting to hit some of these guys in these later picks of the early rounds. You've got a first and 2 seconds right now. This would be the year you kind of got to do it.
Right. Like don't just pick really well in the first round now and flip and not pick well in the later rounds, right?
Yeah.
Like you want to try to get the consistency across the board here.
803-0550, the number two call. Coming up after a quick timeout, Sal Capaccio joins the show. We're going to look a little bit more ahead. Sal has an article out now on some of the unrestricted free agents for the Bills and kind of what the Bills could target in free agency and also the draft as well with the Senior Bowl going on this week. We'll do that after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Changing the head coach is, I think, preposterous. This is a defense that they got to add a difference maker or two on their back end, their back seven. Outside of Taron, Taron's really good. They're nickel. Rasul Douglas, pretty darn good player. But they don't have a difference maker in the back end. Like, Kansas City's got two of them, Justin Reed and Trent McDuffie. Outside of, you know, two or three other really good players. Like, I think Buffalo, if you're going to ask how they figure it out, it's they got to get a difference maker or two on their back end that's really going to help them.
Dan Orlovsky, ESPN, and I think that is going to be a talking point for the next few months. The defense was a constant concern for a lot of Bills fans. Josh, me and you have mentioned it, the third down defense. And they were able to get some stops in the second half of the Chiefs game. Not really so in the first half, and even a lot of the Ravens game kind of felt like if it weren't for the turnovers, that game could have gotten away from them very, very quickly. Ultimately, though, they were built off turnovers, or at least really took advantage of them this year. But for more on free agency, the draft, looking ahead, we go now to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, are you already ready for the draft?
No.
We'll get you there. Don't worry. We're going to get you there.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to go on before that. Let's see, the calendar. Yeah, free agency, I'm much more, you know, I gotta go in sequential order here. You know, you got the combine, and then you have free agency, and then you have the owners meetings, and then you have visits, and then you have the draft. I'm not quite ready for that yet.
I'm ready for the draft in like February. Like when the combine rolls around, I'm like, we've been at this
too
long.
See, here's the thing,
though.
This is what I always get. This happens every year, right? Where I make it a point to point out, like, you're going to be talking. We're all going to be, and rightfully so, right? Like, about, oh my God, they got to take this, got to take this. And all of a sudden, free agency comes and it completely changes everything you need. Like, it's not even anywhere close generally. Like, oh, they need this, they need that. Oh, wait, they signed that guy for, they don't need that anymore.
And it happens every single year. All the mock drafts you read in January, you're like, this is completely outdated. They added three defensive tackles. We're fine. That's exactly right.
It
happens every single year.
So let's get over that hump first.
And so to that point, Sal, you got an article up at our website, WGR550.com. Bills having 19 pending unrestricted free agents. So let's start there. This is a year in transition, but a lot of the players at Locker Cleanout mentioned they want, in a sense, to run this group back. They all really enjoyed what this team had to offer. And ultimately, as much as we're all kind of trashing on the game on Sunday, they were right there against a team that won 15 games and is looking at an unprecedented third straight Super Bowl. It's not like they do have a ton to fix, arguably.
So I think they're in a much, much, much better position than they were 1 year ago heading into the offseason. I mean, last year was all about how are they going to shed some of this salary. There's still a little bit of that to be done, but they did a lot of the stuff last year in order to be flexible this year, in order to have a little more space. So they're going to be in a much better position. Now there's going to be guys who you have to make decisions on as far as guys like Von Miller, right? You can definitely save a lot of money if you move on from Von Miller, how you want to do that. I'm sure there's going to be a discussion about Matt Milano, although, you know, that would be more of a post-June 1 thing if they wanted to do it like a Trey White. I'm not suggesting they would or they wouldn't. I think that they probably keep him. But the point is, there's going to be guys in the roster. You're going to be looking at that. Then you have to, but to start with, who are the guys that you have to attack as far as what to do with their pending free agency status? The team has 19 pending unrestricted free agents. I am not including Micah Hyde. He is retiring, so it would be 20 with him. Anyone who was on the practice squad who has not signed a reserve futures contract is a pending free agent. Anyone on an expiring contract is a free agent. There's 19 of them. They have two pending restricted free agents. That's Shane Buechele and Quentin Morris. I do not expect either of them to get qualified at the minimum restricted tender. That means that will make them an unrestricted free agent unless they sign them before that. And then one pending exclusive rights free agent, Alec Anderson. That should be easy to get done. You just offer them the minimum contract. So out of the unrestricted free agents, 19 of them, I posted them at Sal Sports on X if you want to go check it out. I really think there's only a couple names that are true, like guys that you say, okay, let's get, there's not even like super needle movers, to be honest with you. I think it's just Ty Johnson and Mac Hollins, to be honest with you guys. Like, I think that's kind of it. The other guys are like, okay, it'd be nice to have Amari Cooper back, or okay, it'd be nice to have Rasul Douglas back. But as Dan Orlovsky just said in that clip coming back, you know, they have to maybe make some changes on the back end. So I think they're in a much better position. Look at the guys who are unrestricted free agents. There are no like big names that you say, oh my God, like no one that you would even consider giving a franchise tag to.
Sal, you bring up Rasul Douglas there, and another name that pops out to me is a guy like DeMar Hamlin. Hamlin as well. I understand like they might want to make changes on the back line, or the back end, I should say, but why not also bring back some of these guys? Like Rasul Douglas might not have had the best season, but isn't he kind of an ideal piece to have in terms of veteran leadership for maybe a new piece coming in, whether it be a rookie or a free agent? I mean, he'd be a reliable backup sort of guy, right?
Sure. I mean, he could even be a starter again next year.
Right.
I mean, no doubt. I'm not suggesting they should let everybody walk. What I'm saying is I don't think there's anyone that's a priority. Oh, my God, we have to get him back. You know, for a guy like Rasul Douglas, you probably have other guys who are kind of similar types of players at ages out there who would be free agents. Now it becomes down to money. Like, does he want to come back? What's the price he wants? I'd be all for Rasul Douglas coming back. I don't think it's anything you should go over the top to try to resign him. You need someone like him. So why not him? I agree with you. DeMar Hamlin's an interesting one. You know, I think that a lot of people saw that, you know, DeMar just wasn't quite the athlete or making the plays and, you know, on the ball that a lot of people saw from Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. He wasn't that kind of safety. And let's be honest, I think Cole Bishop has kind of been trending towards taking over that role anyway. So going into next year, your safeties are probably Cole Bishop and Taylor Rapp. That's your starting safety. So DeMar becomes a backup, and there's nothing wrong with that. DeMar can be a backup. He knows the system. I'm fine with that. He can be a special teams player too. I don't think you go into next year thinking DeMar Hamlin's a starter. You certainly shouldn't pay him starter's money in free agency. So then does he have an opportunity to go somewhere else? So I think a lot of those discussions have to happen with a lot of those guys. I think a guy like DeJuan Smoot is the same way. DeJuan Smoot's a nice player. Is he a guy that you need to really pay a lot of money to bring back? Probably not, because you can go out and get guys kind of similar to him this offseason.
In the same vein there as DeJuan Smoot, Jordan Phillips, I mean, didn't he come out and say kind of he wanted to just basically stay here, and if he didn't get to sign here, he'd wouldn't really go anywhere else. He'd just kind of hang out. Like, what do you anticipate with that? Like, he sounds like
Jordan
he really
Phillips
wants to
always wants to stay here.
I know, I know.
And, best years are in Buffalo.
And you know what? It's great, too. Like, yeah, his best years are in Buffalo. So he's another guy where I look like I'm looking at these names. And I know, you, like you just said, you weren't saying, like, don't bring these guys back. But there are a few that really jump off at me where I'm like, yeah, like they're a no-brainer, kind of like a glue guy. You know, like they provide stuff on the field, but they also really provide a lot in the locker room.
Yes. I mean, there are definitely guys like that. Again, listen, you're going to have 90 guys in the roster, guys, right? Like, there's only 53 right now. It's ironic they actually do have 53. That's not only because 53-man roster. There's actually a couple guys, counting all the guys they signed to reserve deals, taking away all the pending free agents, they have 53 players right now. So that means they have to, unless they release some, which they probably will. So let's say they get down to 50. Let's say they release like three guys. They get down to 50. You got to sign 40 more guys. So why not a Jordan Phillips, an Austin Johnson, a Quentin Jefferson? No doubt. So all these are little discussions. Again, this is not a black and white, oh my God, you got to have this guy or not have that. You could bring in guys like, bring back guys like Jordan Phillips. He's older though. That's probably a minimum type deal. And those are probably guys that you don't resign till later in the process or early in the process. It's probably not something you do, you know, it's either going to be something you want to do right away and they want to come back and, okay, we'll sign you a minimum deal. Or you just kind of wait, you feel out how free agency goes. You say, you know what? We kind of need a guy like that. So let's go out and, you know, revisit it.
Sal, last thing for me here, we took a caller in the first hour. As many people have been talking about already, you know, the last 3 days since the loss, we heard Dan Orlovsky talking about it, you know, adding playmakers on defense. And while, you know, this caller mentioned, yeah, we're all talking about Myles Garrett, Max Crosby. What about Khalil Mack? He is going to be a free agent. Of course, he has a connection to Buffalo. He's going to be 34 years old. Had a 17-sack season in L.A., dropped it down, I believe, to 6. Would you be kind of interested in maybe a reunion with Mack? Or I think where I'm at, personally, Sal, I'd be okay adding Mack, but I'd like to add somebody else maybe in the draft or somebody younger that you can sort of build on.
It's funny you say a reunion with Mac because of Buffalo, not because of the Bills, right?
Yeah, right, you know what I mean? Right. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, 6 sacks this year. I mean, he wasn't quite the same player, but, you know, maybe he still got something. Isn't this kind of like the Von Miller signing a couple of years
exactly
ago?
Exactly what I thought,
maybe
yeah.
Not the same kind of money. You know, he can help you. They've done this. They've had these older pass rushers, Leonard Floyd coming in last year, who did a nice job. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for it. He still did have 6 sacks, but that's kind of what you've gotten from like a Greg Rousseau or AJ Epenesa over the last several years, right? And so what does that money look like? Now, he is only a year removed from 17 sacks. So, you know, let's keep that in mind too. And, you know, I'd be for it. I don't think that you have to go spend a ton of money if that costs. Like, if you have to replace, let's say they move on from Von Miller, you're taking a bunch of dead cap money on him, but you're saving money. And then you go sign Khalil Mack. I'm not interested in just replacing all that money with Khalil Mack because I think that it's kind of foolish to do that. And then you're kind of spending twice a little bit, if that makes sense, for an older pass rusher. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's gonna be fascinating to watch, especially, and I know we don't want to rush ahead too much with it, but hearing already from a lot of these draft experts talking about how talented this defensive tackle, this edge rusher class is, I'm interested in how maybe a guy like Khalil Mack kind of is seen on the market, especially with his age and somewhat of the dip in production. Sal, though, before we let you go here, I'm assuming no new updates yet on when Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott are going to speak?
Nothing official from the Bills. I'm thinking maybe tomorrow's the day. Usually, you know, it's only a day or two after, you know, locker clean out. You know, we're already at Wednesday. So my guess is, you know, they'll do it on tomorrow, but that's unofficial. And as soon as we know, we'll let everybody know. And obviously, if it's here during the show at that time, if that's the case, you know, we'll bring you that sound live.
Sounds good. Sal, we'll keep our ears to the ground. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk again soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. That's my thing with Khalil Mack. Like it just feels like what they've done over the last few years. I love the idea. I love the name. But for me, I've got to have somebody else there that I can start building a future towards, where Mack is just kind of there of like immediate production along with a rookie giving you production. And then, All right, you get out of here. Now this guy takes over. And that's where ultimately why I've been big on Max Crosby. I'm not waiting on anything. I'm getting a guy that's going to come in and give me double-digit sacks, a ton of QB hits, a ton of pressures, and he's going to be a difference maker. He's going to be a legitimate problem to deal with.
I do think that if you were to go for a Khalil Mack, it would be after you already know
I agree.
On Max Crosby or Miles Garrett or whoever else may appear here.
That something like that is not materializing.
Yeah. Another, like, I'm just kind of looking through names here. Like, I don't, this is very, like, early on stuff. I mean, we're day three of the offseason, right? Like, it's not like we're, you know, super in on the books on all these guys yet, but
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I'm already talking about Marshall edge rushers. I'm there.
No, I'm in the free agency, but like looking at like
free agency,
like Josh Sweat and Chase Young, they're both free agents.
Oh, Chase Young, what could have been?
Yeah, like I mean, I'm not saying they're like
he's not the same player in terms of the personality. He has totally become like Clowney for me, where just like I know all of the talent is there.
Yep.
But I think for Chase, it's been a lot of injuries. Yeah. Clowney was a lot of like, I might want to play today. I don't know. We're going to figure it out as we go.
Jadeveon Clowney, I will never forgive him for re-injuring Carson Wentz. Never.
Oh, his first playoff game? Yep. He's like three plays in?
Yeah. No, I will never forgive him for that.
That's a shame. You might want to get over that.
No.
No.
Because that's why Carson Wentz isn't respected.
That alone? Oh,
well,
okay.
Injuries. And he was one of the guys that injured him. So, hey,
that's a take. All right. 803-0550, the number to call. One more segment here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here as we get you ready for Sabres Live. The Sabres did win 7-2 yesterday against the Boston Bruins. We got time for one more call here. So we go to CJ on the line. CJ, you're on WGR, my friend.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I just wanted to throw out real quick, as far as talking about the draft and who we should grab in free agency, I think it's weird that since we've had Josh Allen or have known he's been good since 2020, that we don't strengthen his strength, meaning let's be dominant. I mean, if you have a strong arm and you know he can run around, not to run, but to buy time for your receivers to get either deeper or open, why not get speed? I don't know why we don't grab speedsters. I understand grabbing all these route runners because that's where he grew with Stephon Diggs, and we had Curtis Samuel and all these older Beasley. Like, but why not extend? It helps everybody. Now that you have a good old line, the safety can't come down and do anything. It takes away from people going so much QB spy because not only do you have a good old line that can run block very well, you have a very good run blocker who can read the line or find the holes. Speed changes so much. Just like when we started this season and we had Amari Cooper coming to the team, you can't play man like you used to, like when Baltimore beat us.
Even look at the screen game the Bills developed this year with Shakir. If you've got a guy that's running the low 4.4s, I mean, it's a difference maker right there.
Well, I completely agree, and that's where I'm just confused on why we don't do more of that. You know, I'm not here to say the coaches or anything are bad because they got us to the AFC Championship, and out of 32 teams, we're one of the final four, so to speak. But yeah. It's more or less what's the conversation? This conversation started, I think, last year. I'm not going to keep going. I'm going to let you guys talk. You got to go. But even when we had Nyheim Hines and we were complaining about how we're utilizing him, what's the conversation when we draft people and how we're going to utilize them? I know we looked at Coleman as a number one, not a speedster, not a route runner, but he was just considered a number one coming in. But let's draft speed. Why not trade for a Waddle? Right. This is time to eat. The division doesn't scare us. Our division doesn't scare us at all. We know we can get home field advantage. We've shown we can get to the playoffs consistently, but – and I know people want to talk about defense. I think a defensive tackle is the most important piece just to help Ed Oliver or Russo.
Yep.
I think
CJ, we do got to run, though. Thanks for the call, man. But on that point, I think they are going to go defense in the first round, but there are guys like Isaiah Bond who dealt with an injury this year that may not be a first-round pick. Jalen Royals as well is a name I'm going to be talking about a lot out of Utah State. Both are considered speedsters. The big problem is, though, you don't want to always look at the 40 times. Look at the top 40 times in NFL success rates. It's not that high, especially at the wide receiver position. But I do want the team to get faster. Josh, you brought it up too. The last guy they've really had legitimately fast at the wide receiver position, probably John Brown. And, well, that really worked out for them for those like 2 years towards the end of his career. But that's going to do it for us today. Coming up next after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. This is WGR.